Welcome to this edition of the His Show podcast. I'm sitting beside my main man, Austin Robinson. This is Lincoln Long. We got Mark Reynolds back in the booth who will be interviewing today's guest, Daniel Murphy. Goes by Murph is what we'll be calling him, a teammate of Mark's. And, man, we appreciate him joining in today to share a little bit. Looking forward to today's content. So, Austin, if you would, hit us up with a little bit of resume, a little bit of bio, and then let's dig right in.
Yeah, so Murph was born in Jacksonville, Florida. He played college ball at Jacksonville University. And he was selected in the 13th round and was the 394th overall pick by the New York Mets. He made his Major League Baseball debut on August 2nd, 2008, with the Mets. Throughout his 12-year career, Murph played for four different teams. Those four teams were the Mets, the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Rockies. Murph was a three-time All-Star. He was the 2015 NLCS MVP. And he was a two-time Silver Slugger Award winner. He also won gold with Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. And his career stats were, he had 138 career home runs, 735 career RBIs, and he was a .296 career hitter.
Appreciate that, Austin, and quite the resume there, brother. We appreciate you joining us in today, and I know that you and Mark were teammates, so, man, I'll just kind of kick it over to Mark and then just tell us a little bit about the relationship between you guys and teammates and anything like that.
Yeah, so I had met Murph playing against him throughout the years and, you know, never really got to know him too well. I think we probably met at PAO one time, Murph, once or twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, never really had a relationship. And then I signed late one in 2018 and with the Nationals, and I go down to extended spring training in Palm Beach, and Murph was there rehabbing. So we kind of got to know each other. He had a pretty serious knee injury. But we got together on the backfields down there and got to know each other real well. And then a couple weeks later, we're both on the Nationals and grinding away. And fortunate enough, what, the next year, right? We're both end up in Colorado together.
Yeah, we're both in Denver, 19.
Yep, both in Denver. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I can say is we had an instant connection playing with each other because of our faith in Jesus, and we always had something to talk about and kind of be on the same page about. So, you know, how was I? Was I okay, teammate Murph?
Yeah, Papa. You sat in the front of the bus. And, well, you need somebody around over the course of a long season who's going to say the quiet things out loud, because you just have different personalities. So, like, Papa would be in the front of the bus, and, like, if we had a good trip, like, boys, it's a proper trip. If somebody didn't have a good trip or we didn't have a good one, it's like, hey, we need to tighten up going forward. And, you know, he has his ways of saying it, as I think you two know.
There you go. Well, you got to have one of those guys around, Mark.
So. And he called me.
He got a couple of them.
He calls me Papa because I don't know if it was because old guy on the team or if somebody did something good, we would go, Papa. Like, we're surprised.
So. Papa.
Yeah. So that's where that comes from. So, Murph, just tell us a little bit about kind of, you know, your baseball journey, you know, getting drafted or getting recruited out of high school, going to college, getting drafted, how you made your college decision, things like that.
Yeah. So, like, you know, as far as, like, youth baseball, one of the things I really remember growing up was my dad was, like, always there. If I wanted to hit, he was throwing. And he would throw until I asked him to stop. And I didn't really think I asked him to stop. So, you know, did T-ball, you know, from 5 to, what, 7. And then Little League kind of started from 8 to 10. And then we called it midget, or what we went tadpole, and then Little League was 10 to 12 for us. And, you know, I was able to play in kind of this intimate group of guys growing up. And then we all went from basically playing together since we were 5 to 12, and we played high school together. So there's a cool kind of tight-knit group of, like, kind of like just proper, like, blue-collar dudes that I grew up with. Like, our park was, you know, it had a little edge to it, like a little redneck edge to it. And so some of that, well, like, my dad grew up in Kentucky and my mom did too. It's like, you know, it's in the bloodstream. And so it really helped me growing up because like they were tough dudes, and they stretched me in a way that was good if I can interweave in. I grew up in the church as well too. So like there's the church should be and is a safe and welcoming place, but the world is not always a safe and welcoming place. Mm-hmm. So when we step outside the intimacy of the church, we do it and get introduced to like, man, the world's a rough place, and you're going to get punched in the mouth. Whatever it is you're doing, baseball, you have a rough day, you don't do well in school, whatever goal you're trying to aim at to get that you don't get, like that's punch in the mouth. And like these guys really stretched me in a way that was uniquely different from Sunday school and needed, and both of them were needed. And so I grew up with these guys, and we played Tala high school together. And then as I got into probably about high school, so 14, 15 age, that's when travel ball had just kind of started coming into the scene for us down here. I don't know about you, Mark, up there in Virginia Beach, but I was, so that would be, what if I was 15, like 2000 or so, like right in that area, early 2000s is where. So I started playing a bit of travel ball, and had, you know, played well enough to play a couple of good showcases. And then the recruiting process in the college kind of began. And I got one like Division I scholarship offer for money, and that was at JU. And I took a step back, and some bigger schools asked to be a preferred walk-on, and had some good offers from some good Division II schools. But I wanted to play Division I baseball. That was just something that I had set my mind on. It doesn't mean it's right. It was just something that I had chosen. Mm-hmm. And JU, I think, pursued me in a way that made me feel wanted, in a way that the other school is different. So I was kind of like, well, if I got to choose, I'd rather be the bride than the bridesmaid somewhere else. And so, like, I'll go to JU. And that, you know, that's kind of a brief youth journey for me.
All right, then. So you went to JU. You obviously you had success. You caught attention of scouts, and kind of walk us through that process as you're getting older and progressing in your college career. Were you a junior? Were you a senior? Did you, you know, kind of your minor league journey? You know, your work ethic, kind of to get to where you had to go, because you're one of the hardest workers I've ever been around and played with. With all your what was that thing? The STEM thing.
Oh, yeah, I electrocute myself.
Yeah, he electrocutes himself every day. Just walk us through that kind of getting drafted through the minor league journey and then moving on into, you know, your debut.
Okay. So I got drafted, fortunately, in 2006, and I was hurt. My knee was hurt, and so I signed and played kind of a partial season in 2006 in the short seasons that they send the draft guys off to. In 2007 – I was really fortunate that I was able to bypass low A and go straight to playing high in the Florida State League and stayed there the whole year and learned a whole heck of a lot about what it looks like to have to show up to work every day. Like, well, it's 142 games in 150 days. Like, it's like drinking through a fire hose.
And bus rides and crappy hotels.
I would say, like, I grew up in Florida, and so I'd be down there and we'd be working. And it's sweltering heat. It's disgusting. But I hadn't played in it like that. I had gone up to Virginia with you guys for the last couple summers to play in the Valley League. I was like, that place is beautiful. And so they kept asking, like, aren't you used to this? I was like, nobody gets used to this heat. This is disgusting. You're just sweating. But it did teach me a lot because I had an older player named Joe Hippus who had made it all the way to the big leagues as a catcher and had come back as a pitcher. And so he was working his way, and he showed me the first guy that really showed me what it looked like to be a pro. So in the state league, I learned that, like, I used to drink, I'd walk around with a gallon jug of water, and I'd drink one of those every day. Like, I'd hammer it. And I learned how to do that in the state league. That taught me one of the big things, I think, that did help me, is that I would drink water when I was thirsty, like, all the time. That was one of the things I always did. And I still now, actually, Tori, this is Tori's thing, but got all our teams on it. But I still, like, I have water.
Staying hydrated.
And I think it's, honestly, I used to do it, and I had a couple buddies of mine in the state league, and we kind of committed, one specifically, Nick Evans, who played in the big league. And we kind of committed to, like, we can control this. We can't control hits. I wish we could, because I'd get a whole heck of a lot more of them. But we can drink our water and, you know, try to eat as healthy as you can. And then the next year I went to Double A in Binghamton, was there for 4 months and was fortunate. I played really well. Got called up to the big leagues in August of 2008. And we were in a pennant race, and I played, fortunately, again, really well down that pennant race. We came just short of going into the postseason. Papa, where were you in 08?
I was in Arizona. Yep, we fit polishing off 100 loss season. After we get to the NLCS the year before.
There you go.
Oh, that happened fast. Yeah, so we got bounced the last day of the season by the Marlins beat us, who were out of it, which I think allowed the Brewers to get in, and the Phillies won the division.
I remember that year.
Yeah, well, there was back-to-back years where the Mets had stumbled. Like, the year before, I think, really stumbled down the stretch. That year was kind of a stumble, but not.
Is that when the Marlins came in and beat you guys, like, the last day of the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
And so was Scott Olsen, I believe, started the game because Nick Evans and I were platooning in left field. Because neither one of us were outfielders. I debuted as an outfielder. Like, well, I'm not much of a defender to begin with, but, like, I certainly wasn't an outfielder. And so I debuted out there, and, well, I did okay in 08. In 2009, when we get there, it doesn't go quite as well. I get sent back to the dirt forever. They never let me go back to the outfield. But, yeah, Olsen started that game in 2008, and they beat us, and that was it. And but then I went to the Fall League, and, well, going to the Fall League after playing well in the big leagues was – it was moving slower than I had expected. And so I swung the bat. Burn it really well. And then end up winning the job in 2009 in left field. Had a lot of trouble staying on my feet out there and was relegated to first base because Carlos Delgado had gotten hurt that year and I think had some hip surgery. And then played the whole year of 2009, basically full season at first base. And thinking about it now, it was a big deal to be able to get all those at bat. And I spent, I'd say, about at least 60% of the season waiting for Jerry Manuel to call me into his office to send me down. So I hit like 267 and maybe on base like 323. And I never walked anyway. I never had a walk in me, so I didn't, my own base percentage was never that high. But yeah, that year was, that was, I'm actually, as we do this, I'm doing all of this without Jesus, but it's not that I'm not trying to fill that void that we have, you know what I mean? Or maybe not, I want to say, boy, that yearning we have for fulfillment from something deeper. So I was trying stuff at this time. None of it's really landing, and we're in the big leagues and trying to compete, you know, kind of at the tip of the spear. But I got to play every day, which was a big deal. They ran me out there against lefties and righties and learned a lot about myself. 2010, I get hurt right out of camp, don't break. Rehab back, playing well, and then they asked me to transition to second base, and I get hurt doing that. I had never done it before. I get taken out on a double play. I missed the whole season. 2011, I started as a platoon player in the big leagues. This is, yeah, so that's just, I don't want to go through all the years, you know, and then, so that's, gets me to, you know, the big leagues, and then I spend 7 years with the Mets, and fortunate that they allow me to play and grow, and then in 2015, we make the postseason. It kind of the – well, we weren't very good for, like, a long time. In 15, we got Yoenis Cespedes, and he kind of pushed us into the postseason, and I played well and then was able to carry that into Washington for – so there's probably about a little over a two-year stretch where I played really, really well. Like, I swung the bat really well.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you kind of grew up in the church or whatever, and – then you just mentioned that you didn't have Jesus at that time in the big leagues in like 09, 10 or 8 or 9, and you're just kind of learning on the fly. So what made you kind of reach out for another option besides doing it all on your own?
So that, what I would say, is has been one of the real blessings of my mom and dad taking us to church. You know, my mom is, I'd say, especially when we were younger, and then my dad came to faith a bit later and then joined us more intently, I would say, with more intention. But so this entire time I'm trying other stuff. I know that Jesus is like, hey man, like, you know, it's me, dude. Like, I went to the cross for you. You learned about this. You were there the whole time. And I kept thinking, well, what if what you want for me isn't as good is what I want for me, or is fun, or all of the things. And then my wife Tori and I were dating at the time, and this actually comes to 2011, and I had gotten hurt about 4 months into the year, right around August. And I was playing well. I was hitting about 320 and kind of on the cusp of, I don't know if Mark, you remember, kind of on the cusp of feeling like you established yourself as a major leaguer. Mm-hmm. Like there's kind of a turning point a little bit where you're like, I think I belong here. I think I belong here. And they're like, ooh, I think I'm a major leaguer. And then once you hit that, you're kind of like, okay, what? I'm going to go and see if I can make, you know, an all-star game or something like that. And so I was kind of on that cusp and I got hurt. And, you know, I'm spending that off season watching these guys play, but also somewhat fulfilled knowing that I'm a major league player. I just got done hitting 320 for like 4 months. And Tori and I had been dating for about 4 years. And, well, darn women if they don't think that, you know, you should grow up and stop being Peter Pan after 4 years. And she was right to feel that way. I was not. I was still Peter Pan, and I still had some contending to do with Jesus in my life, and he had some slapping of me to do around. Well, I didn't say slapping, but, well, he pursued me, and that's not always fun, I would say, mm-hmm. or the fire can get turned up on that. And so at this time, well, I'm a mess. I'm an absolute wreck. I think I've achieved this goal that I've been trying to attain, which I have been, which is, you know, major league player, and I have it and it's empty. And, you know, I end up breaking up with Tori at that time. But I end up reaching out to my mom, and, you know, she graciously guides me and leads me, and I surrender my life to Jesus. And then I begin my, I would say, more righteous pursuit of my now wife, and pursue her in a way. And then she, through God's grace and Jesus's love, finds it in herself to forgive me for what I've done to her because she feels the love of Jesus. And then we're engaged that January, and we're kind of, you know, trying to struggle uphill together with Jesus. Not to say that we don't, you know, well, marriage, man, you know. So that would be my coming to Jesus, you know, my salvation story, I would say. And then when we get sanctified, you know, we get that fun part of to go forward.
Right. Now you mentioned also, you seem like, I didn't know this. I mean, you had a lot of injuries throughout your career and a lot of ups and downs. Was there a time before Jesus where you had these injuries and you felt like you just had nothing to fall back on? And then after you found Jesus, and I know you had that big microfracture surgery on your knee, how much did it help to be able to lean on him through those tough times, knowing that you know, you're in his hands and you'll do everything in his timing?
That's a good one. That's a good two-part one. So on the first one, I would say, I like hitting baseballs, man. And I would say that pursuit masked some of my not having Jesus in my life, I would say, for that stretch of time. So, like, I think the first time I got banged up was I got hurt in college. So I signed. But, like, I just wanted to hit baseballs. And so, like, the kind of keeping my head down in pursuit of that took me all the way to, I would say, and it wasn't like there weren't points in time from, you know, 21 to I was about 27, I would say, 28 when I got saved, that I didn't like pursue it. But kind of for that 7-year stretch, it was like hit baseballs like this. And then I would say afterwards, kind of trying to come through that, I would say like the microfracture surgery. So trying to do what was life like having Jesus, you know, guide me, you know, try to surrender to him. And I would say just a different type of struggle and tension, because now that I'm his, well, he's got to reveal and remove blind spots in my life, start getting rid of some of the dross. And some of that dross was, well, for that, like I had, for that 7 years where I went to hit baseballs for peace and comfort and type of things. So it's like, okay, hey man, I know that was good for you and it was sweet for a time, but that's not sustainable. You know, I'm sustainable. So all those times that you go 4 for 4 and you think you have value, and then you go 0 for 9 and think that you don't, no, you're supposed to come to me with that. I'm like, but I don't want to do that. That's not my thing. I go to do this, you know? And so there's kind of that tension that just, and then it would change from there to, well, we start, you know, we start having children, you know, I want to be a better husband. And it's like, okay, baseball isn't, you can do baseball and this, so take on a bit more responsibility with your wife. Okay. You come to me, you don't retreat to here. You don't try to go to the field at noon. Like, you stay home and contend with your wife, or you try to stay home and give your kids a bit extra. It's like, well, you know, the field can be a sanctuary as well too. It's not like I didn't use it to run away at times. And so these are the areas where I feel like we were, like Jesus was contending with me now. Mm.
I tell you one thing, playing with you and getting to know you over the years was how I saw Jesus in you, apart from, you know, getting everybody to chapel and making sure everyone kind of got together, was the love that you have for your wife and your family, you know? And I think that's something I really respected about you. You know, you called your wife the queen, and, you know, your kids were always around, and it was really something that I looked up to you about and took that into my own life, as far as, you know, showing Jesus in different ways. You know, some guys, you see Jesus in the way they act around the clubhouse or act in certain situations, how they deal with failure. I really saw it in you with how you and your family was like the center, and baseball was something that you just kind of did, you know, like when we were around each other a lot. So, Link, you got anything for him?
No, I was just going to share. I love what you said about the being sanctified piece, because I think that's one and failing, you know, forward. I love that, because, you know, what you talked about, and we share that on each of our episodes, is kind of what is that gospel, you know, what is that? And I love what you said about you kind of grew up in church, but then not necessarily ran from it. You knew the seeds were planted, but then there came that time when Jesus became real to you, which I love that. And because for me, it was similar. I grew up in church. I knew the right things, but I guess Jesus never made it from my brain to my heart, so to speak. And what I love to share on here, and then I'm going to ask you to elaborate briefly, is kind of like, what is the gospel? You know, for those listening, it's, hey, just like Murph and all of us here, I mean, God created us with a plan and a purpose, and he loves us unconditionally. And then he set a standard, which is perfection and holiness, which all of us have missed the mark on. That's what baseball players don't have trouble understanding, that, hey, we've missed the mark, because nobody's batted 1,000. It's like that in our behavior. And then we're kind of around the Easter season now. So what God did was he sent his son Jesus to die in our place to atone for those sins, and then walk that out. You know, he walked out of the tomb and then established his power over this earth as well as eternity. And then it rests with us, like, hey, what will we do with that? Will we rest in Jesus? Will we except that we've fallen short? And then when we become justified, there becomes that sanctification process, which is a long word for allowing Jesus into what you said. I love that, those blind spots, those places, and what that looks like. And so kind of after, how do you feel like God used, I love what you said about marriage too. I feel like marriage and parenting is God's sanctification tool, like, big time. I mean, you see those blind spots, you see that. So you're following Jesus, you're still playing the game, you're married, you have kids. I mean, just briefly, kind of, how was that? How do you feel like your mindset shifted a little bit, or how did God use, whether it's success or failure in the game, to kind of use that as a sanctification process?
Yeah, good. So the way I kind of thought about it, so there, I don't believe that there's a finite amount of us. I think that once we're willing to take on more responsibility, and like willing, I mean, like, I have to willing to choose to serve my wife. Well, once I choose to do that in whatever area, I'm now the person that can do that. Well, once I can do it once, and then I can build on that. So once I can become the guy that's like, oh, sorry.
All good.
Did you guys lose me?
Okay. No, I got sorry. You. We just had a camera snafu, but we're good, man. You carry on.
No, that was me. On my side, I'm trying to run out of gas. If it happens again, I'll plug in. But really what I'd say is, so once I'm the guy that can, like, do baseball, and serve my wife. I can do both. Well, then we have a child, and I would have guys in front of me that would go ahead and they would kind of show me, like older guys, they're like, but this is something that you can do. You know what I mean? And I would talk to Trevor about that. I'd be like, hey, you weren't certain you would be a major league player, but now you're going to be able to do it as a husband. You know what I mean? And then as a father, and then you can take on more responsibility, I guess is what I'm saying. And what Jesus, I would say, is he kept putting these opportunities in front of me. And then people, I would say opportunity, and then opportunities are people. And then when mm-hmm. I didn't take them, my wife would be there and be like, hey man, there's more of you. Like, there's a better version of you in there. And I'm like, yes, I know, sweetheart. I know. And then, well, now I serve my children a bit more that day. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe Jesus decides to be gracious and I go 2 for 3 at the pump that night or something. I don't know how it works, but I can play. But I'm now the person that can do both, you know? And I would say, you know, in my faith journey, that's where I feel like Jesus stretched me. Because I'm naturally an isolated person by nature. I like to be alone. Like, I'm not as comfortable around people. You know what I mean? I can be, and I'm sociable, but I don't mind being alone. And so, you know, Jesus would stretch me. He's like, you can't be alone. Like, you got to go and serve people. That's why I'm here. That's why I came. Did I not serve you?
And didn't you miss, speaking of family, you missed opening day to see your child being born, correct? And wasn't that a big ordeal?
So Noah, yeah, here we are. Opened the bell rings here not too long. It's opening day. Baseball.
Most exciting day of the year, by the way.
It is. Very
I loved opening day.
It's quite hectic.
Oh, I loved it.
Did you?
I didn't sleep the night before, man. I was ready to roll.
Man, did you? Oh, I slept. I slept because I knew, well, not like hard, but like with an anticipation of like, all right, if the bell rings at 1 p.m. tomorrow, then I want to be here, here, here doing this. And I want to be all in my spots because, well, like, I get it. Like, you do, and it's awesome. You announce you and stuff. But like, well, it's the ABs, man. Like, I was concerned about that AB. I wanted to be ready for that first at bat. And so, yeah, opening day was fun. Noah was born on March 31st, and it was opening day, I think, for us that year. And, Tori called me the night before. It's like, it's going down. And so she was having Noah in West Palm. I was in New York, and I think I texted Terry Collins and said, hey, Skipper, I'm out. My mom was with me. I got a flight the next morning. I texted EY Jr., who's a first base coach for the Washington Nationals. I said, Junior, you're in there tomorrow at second. I'm hitting the road. And went there, it worked out well because I got to be there for the birth. She held on. She is the queen. Mm-hmm. And so made it for that. The next day is the day off because in case it rains, you want to make sure everyone wants opening day. Missed the next day and then made it for the last game of the series.
At least the bright side of that whole thing is, you know, you got to miss the ace that day.
Yeah, who would have been, who would have opened up for him 15? Was it Strauss, maybe? Zimmerman? I think
DC?
I missed Strauss and Zimmerman.
Oh, yeah, those aren't too bad.
No, we were at home. It was in New York.
Okay. Well, for you being a lefty, they might not be too bad, but I didn't like facing those boys too much.
No, I did. I swung it well off of Zimmerman.
Yeah.
Strauss, not as much.
Oh, well, good stuff, man.
I think Austin has a question.
Yeah, I was going to say, Austin, before we get to closing down, anything that you got to share, man, or anything you picked up or any questions you got, Austin, man, feel free to let them rip.
Yeah, Murph, first thing, your son's got a great birthday because we share the same birthday, March 31st. So
there you go.
Great Boom. Great day to be born.
All right.
But the question I have, I heard you.
Happy belated birthday. I appreciate it.
Same to your son. But I heard you talk about when you were mentioning your faith journey, how the impact that your mom and your dad both had on you. But one thing I have for you, what throughout your major league career, whether you were in New York, Washington, Colorado, was there anyone that helped you in your faith walk, in your journey, whether it was in the clubhouse or, you know, just anyone around you throughout your career that really helped you, walked alongside of you, held you accountable? Is there anyone that stands out, any stories you have about that?
Yeah, I've got a couple real quick, if you don't mind. First, I would say that my parents, that you brought a really interesting idea to me that I was thinking about. So, yes, my parents were really influential. My mom, so I think I think what we try to do is as parents is like, mom makes the home, and my mom did, like, this is you're always welcome here. You know what I mean? And then dad is like, you are welcome here, but the world is waiting for you. And I'm going to prepare you to go out into it. And I'm going to stretch you in a way that prepares you as best I can while I set boundaries on the rules of the game. And so they did a really good job of that. You know what I mean? My mom, our home is very welcoming. I always feel welcome there. My dad stretched me. He's like, hey, I know you want to be here. And even now, but like, there's an adventure out there for you, and I got to prepare you for it. And then that took me into, so there's a gentleman, Brad Andrus, was our strength coach in New York. And so I found that Tori and I had just gotten married, I believe. So it's probably maybe the 2013 season. Yeah, 2013 season. But he showed me, like, he was a believer, but he didn't, like, tell you about it. But now looking back on it, I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure. And I would just go in there and listen to him, and he taught me a lot of things about – so he had an example one time about baseball, and it's something that I think that we all really, really enjoy. But the more you play it, sometimes it feels like it could be a bit much, like it's a chore. And I was like, I would go in there and I'm like, I'm tired. And he gave me the permission, like, well, he goes, if you had birthday cake 162 straight times, or 162 in 180 days, do you think you'd still like birthday cake? And he went like that. And I go, okay, fair. So he would give me the freedom to be like, okay, this is difficult. But then also I'd come in there and sometimes I'd be tired, and he'd know I had more in him. He goes, you can post today. Like, go out there. You're not the guy that can go out there and post when you're tired or a little banged up until you do it. I remember one time I did it and I cracked a homer. And he kind of like looked at me a little bit and I was like, oh, okay. It's not to say that you do it every time. It's just to say that he stretched me. And then another one was our chaplain in New York, Cali, Magallanes, who was really just soft-spoken and soft-hearted and just had a really intimate way of leading me, I would say, through this journey and how he was a husband and a father. And he was also traveling quite a bit because he didn't live in the city. So he traveled quite a bit to us, to serve us. And then he was trying to serve this church as well, too, in a leadership role, I think, as the pastor. But he was taking on a lot for us. And he ended up marrying Tori and I here in Jacksonville. And so, yeah, there's more than that. Those were a couple that came to me as you asked the question.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, listen, I appreciate, man, you taking the time and sharing a little bit about your journey, just about your faith journey. Can't thank you enough. And anything outstanding before I begin to sign off, you got, Mark, or anything?
I don't, like, man. We got to, you know, like I said, I really appreciate you coming on, Murph. I know it's taking time out of your day, and I know we're all busy. We all got stuff to do. But, man, it's good to see you and good to catch up. And, you know, we got to get together back down there in Jacksonville and golf a little bit.
Yeah, I think I need to come to you. I need to come to you. The weather starts turning warm down here. I might need to come to you guys.
We're always open for business up here in North Carolina, bud.
Well, good stuff. Well, guys, I appreciate you joining this edition of the His Show podcast. Once again, we got me, Lincoln Lawing. You can reach out at lincoln@lincolnlawing.com. Email, you got austinrobinson@fca.org. Feel free to reach out. We got Mark Reynolds. If you want his contact info, got to come through us. We got Murph, if you want his contact info, you got to come through us to go through Mark to get to him. And that's how we'll roll. But ladies and gentlemen, we can't thank you enough for joining us. Murph, thanks again. Austin, Mark, appreciate it. This is Lincoln Long and the crew signing off from the His Show podcast. See you next time.